Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017, number 47. And this is with Annika and Jacob. So, hello, Annika.
Hello, how are you?
Hello.
And hello, Jacob. So, I think we should start with you describing yourself, because you've been on my channel for about a month or maybe longer than that now, and posting comments here and there, and you've been in the live chat. And so I think people might be a bit intrigued to know who you are. So could you take care of that?
Okay. I think there are some misconceptions. I think a lot of people think that I'm on the alt-right, or that I'm that I've been on the alt-right for some significant amount of time. And so to clear up some of those misconceptions, I did not know what the alt-right even was up until the last few weeks when I've been in the chat. I heard the term alt-right maybe around the election time, and I think I heard it described as neo-Nazis, but I mean, aren't we all? And so anytime I hear anybody describe someone as a white supremacy or a Nazi, I immediately dismiss that, because I know how those words get misused. And I just kind of assumed alt-right, obviously on the right, meaning conservative. I have, most of my life, I have identified, or thought I identified, more on the left. I was raised in Sweden, and then I lived in California, mostly Southern California. But I'll go into some of that, some of those details later. I consider myself a former libtard. But anyway, to get on
more. Recovering libtard.
Yeah, recovering libtard. And I say that more jokingly. I didn't agree with all of the leftist views. And so as far as like what I know of the alt-right has been the things that I've just been learning just through observation. And I'm also learning in the last few weeks that there's a big difference between the bottom feeder hate mongers that call themselves alt-right and the kind of more the people that are the voices, the ones that have the like the bigger channels like you and like Faith Goldie. I guess she's considered alt-right now, right? She's an identitarian.
Yeah, she's an identitarian. That's how she describes herself. I would say that there are a lot of guys in the alt-right who comment on videos and so on, and they are angry, and they've often got very good reasons to be angry. So I wouldn't want to disparage them. I understand that you've had nasty experiences with them. But hopefully we can get into the basis of those issues in this hangout. But obviously they can present an unfortunate face of the alt-right, depending on the encounter.
Yeah, and I
which
think
is a problem.
You did address most of my concerns through your Malice Aforethought video, which I appreciate that. Got about 2/3 of the way through the video and said, thank you. For this video, I kind of felt like you uploaded much of that content was through back and forth, or at least, you know, one-way conversations we were having through Skype.
A lot of people were having those ideas, male and female, who were talking to me, and so I felt that it was the right thing to actually state them in the public realm.
Yeah. So recently, I took a political compass test and found that I fell more on the right than the left, not by much. And I'll probably retake that test in another year. And I think it wasn't up until this election cycle, which I did not vote for Trump, but who I'm going to vote for in 2020 remains to be seen.
Yeah, you also didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, it's important to say.
No, I did not vote for murderous Clinton. I would never vote for a Clinton ever. Part of why I didn't vote for Trump, I was not at the time partial to him. I didn't kind of like his attitude and everything. But I live in an extremely liberal city that I knew was going to be won by Hillary, in a state, I live in Texas, which I knew was going to be won by Trump. So I knew that my one vote was going to do nothing, except, so I went with a third party just so that there was one more tick in the box of third party, knowing that my vote meant absolutely shit. It was more of just a, just throwing a purple coin in the fountain so that there was one more person out there.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. I mean, it's important to note that Texas, well, according to the demographics, it's not going to remain like that for very long.
That's why in 2020, I'm not gonna be doing that.
Mm.
2020 so I think, will matter.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think it would be interesting to describe yourself to you know, your sort of career, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, I originally went to college to be a surgeon. And then after spending a bunch of money on my degree, I decided to get into the game industry. I had been doing programming when I was younger. I did a lot of like game. I was a gamer. I don't really like that word because I think it kind of labels you. I played video games. That's not really anything to be proud of. It's just something that I did to pass the time. It was a hobby.
And that was your entry into programming?
So that was, gaming was my entry into script editing. And then script editing was my entry into game programming. Getting a Commodore 64 when I was 8 years, or we had a Commodore 64. And having that when I was about 8 years old, it was a shared system. My father threw me a basic programmer's guide and told me over the summer that I had to learn to program before I could play video games. So that's how I learned to program.
Right.
So it was kind of, you know, school of hard knocks. So between age 8 and 13, I was doing mostly basic. And in fact, you and I have spoken on, we've discussed
some. Yeah, various programming languages.
Yeah.
But for the benefit of the audience, so how did that lead into your 20s?
So I was doing some web design through college to help pay for that. And then I got my A+ certification so that I could get a job, and which was also to help pay off college debt. I was working for AT&T at the time. It was right after I graduated college. I had tons of debt, no way to pay it back, and I knew I didn't want to go to med school. So I got a job for AT&T doing their surfboard modems. I was pretty much just swapping out modems for them, and this was in Dallas, Texas. So not that you guys need my entire biography, but so I was doing that. So I had
that you're a roboticist, the cool stuff.
Okay, so I had a technical background. And I had a biology degree with a technical background. I decided to make, and I was a gamer. So I decided to make programming and software development kind of more my career. And at the time, robotics wasn't really a career. So it was more like computer oriented. And I didn't get into full-time robotics as a career until 2008. So I pretty much had like jobs that were, I would say like, software more. And then I did hardware tinkering. In 2005, the Arduino board came out. And so I was doing little projects, but there wasn't a whole lot. It's a microcontroller.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay. So yeah, we've also talked about some projects that you're interested in. You have like a Makey board or something similar.
Yeah, I just not Makey, little bits. I got into that briefly, but then I realized it's not serious. It's for kids. Yeah. So I got bored of it.
Okay. But so I got into robotics as a career in about 2008, between 2005 and 2008. And I worked in Hollywood. And so that's extremely liberal. And I think even though I didn't always agree with the views of those that I worked around, I was able to ignore. Does that make sense? I was able to just kind of get in, do my job, and leave. I wasn't forced to. I wasn't forced to really get political up until about 2014-15.
Mm. Oh yeah, this is something that a lot of people suffer with.
Yeah.
They obviously enter a realm of employment which is largely liberal. I imagine once upon a time the opposite happened, but that doesn't happen. So you enter you're right wing and you enter a liberal sort of place, and you have to deal with that somehow. And for a lot of people, it's intensely frustrating. Other people just find a way to get used to it and accept it.
For me, I would say it wasn't that I was right-wing and a liberal. I know that that's an issue most people have. I would say that for me, it was more that I was just apolitical. Like I didn't care because I didn't think things affected me as much. And for the most part, they weren't affecting me directly. Not as much as they affect me now, and not as much as they affect many other people. You know, outside of like tax policies and such. Now I was living in Los Angeles, and open borders obviously affect me greatly. And they did affect me because I wasn't rich. I was actually very broke all the time, despite the fact that I was making good money. There was no chance in hell I was ever going to own a house. I was single the whole time. I busted my ass. And then in 2004, I was very young and I started my own business, and I just struggled. I struggled, struggled, struggled. And it was paycheck to paycheck. It was, you know, every month, it was before I'd eat lunch. Sometimes I'd have to check my bank account to see if I had enough money on my debit card to see what I could eat for lunch. I mean, it was that much of a struggle. And this went on for years.
Now, a lot of people would say that women should basically at that age be looking for a husband and settling down. And not even...
I was in California.
Oh, that's a good excuse,
but
I suppose.
But I'm sorry. Yeah, it's... I had told you previously, and I've told other people, friends of mine would ask why I'm not attracted to Swedish men. And I say, because I'm not a lesbian. And it's very, very similar reason why I'm not attracted to California men. There's very certain types in California, and none of them are my type. So I moved to Texas, and when I came out here to visit, I went to a Mensa meeting because I was going to be going to joining a new region out here, and a guy that I met coincidentally, we had some overlap in some of our interests. And then later he found me on a dating site. And then later he found my car in a parking lot. He was making fun of a bumper sticker I had. And it was just coincidentally, we kept bumping into each other. And then he like asked me out for dinner. And then now we're together. So, I'm married. Oh yes. We're married and we have gorgeous, brilliant kids. And no,
so
he's...
this is the thing.
I've been accused of...
So this is the thing that I wanted to talk to you about, right? Because obviously you are a very distinctive person, character. And you've come up against something in the alt-right, which is the opposition to women having careers. And so this is a sort of interesting case, a sort of anomaly case. So let's go into the topic of women having careers. And I think you know what I'm talking about. So
yes.
What would you say about this?
I am the very first to admit that I am a statistical outlier. I know, and I tell people this all the time, had I been married, had I just settled down in my early to mid-20s, I do not think I would be happy today. I did not desire that. I tried. I wanted so desperately to just be normal. And I had zero interest in it. It wasn't just about not finding the right person. I mean, maybe if the right guy would have swept me off my feet, things would have been different. But I know people always say, oh, well, you were living in California. I know that's a very easy cop-out for me. I just didn't have the drive. I didn't have the drive to have babies.
But you did have a drive in terms of career.
Oh, yes. I'm very alpha female, extremely alpha female. I'm also... if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it all the way. I don't want to be a cog in a machine. I want to be the machine. It's not even about being in control, because I know that sounds really weird to say that. And it's very difficult for people to understand. Like, it's not about being the figurehead of an organization. It's that I have this very strong drive to succeed in other ways. And it wasn't even just about the money. That's the other thing. I think that a lot of people think that you want to own your own business because you want to make a ton of money. And there can be that benefit. Not always. I failed miserably a couple of times. I always had a drive to succeed business-wise. And it just, it, And I know that not all women have that drive. And I think that when women do have that drive, I don't want to tell those women that they should, you know, pour water on that flame and go get married and have children. But I think a lot of, however, I am sick and tired of all these women's magazines telling women that they should go get a career and allow their ovaries to turn to rocks. And then when they're, you know, in their mid 30s, go, you know, adopt a baby from Africa. I'm really sick and tired of that. Like how Google is now paying women to freeze their eggs. No, if you want a child, if you're going to freeze your eggs, go have a baby.
I suppose the issue is to what extent should that be encouraged? Because obviously people don't just do whatever they want. They don't even know what they want. Most people are guided by society, by social norms and so on. So to what extent should these social norms tell women specifically, don't put career ahead of motherhood?
Yes, I agree. I mean, I agree that a lot of this is society. And now we're talking about how women feel pressured, but I wouldn't call myself a men's rights activist because I guess I'm a human's rights activist. If I'm any kind of rights activist, I think that both men and women feel pressured, you know, especially when it comes to like starting a family. I talk to men who really desperately want to start a family. Some of them are in the room with me, but they also know that socially they know that it's wrong. Like I had a business partner when I was 24 and he said that from the age of like 18, he wanted a family, but that people told him that was gay, which doesn't even make sense. Or that people told him that that was very, it was looked down upon for, you know, a high school student who's going into college to express a desire to start a family. And now.
Yeah, but once upon a time, that would have been absolutely normal, wouldn't it?
Agreed.
I mean, yeah, the 18-year-old might have wanted to mess around for a bit, but only like a matter of less than a year, really, before the expectation would have been, okay, when are you going to get a wife?
Yeah, I agree. I actually think it's really interesting. Like, my attitude changes when I'm talking. So we've gone and hung out with these Proud Boys before, like after we went to the March Against Sharia. And we hung out with some of the Proud Boys, and they get a little rowdy. But once in a while, like, they'll talk about how, you know, and some of these guys are 22, 23, and they're talking about how they can't wait to get married and settle down and have kids. And I'm like, oh, this is so sweet. Like, hashtag Texas.
They need to join the alt-right.
I'm sure they you know, lean more.
We made jokes about those base civic nationalists and the Proud Boys. I can't believe that he chose that name for the organization. No, what was he thinking?
I don't know. I think some of them lean more your direction than you think.
I think that's true. And it's interesting. It does seem to be sort of like a junior club. And then I don't understand why. I don't know what the need for it is. Maybe it's because they're sort of so blue-pilled. They've got to go through in stages, maybe.
That's one of the things, you know, I joked earlier that I was just going to come on here and, you know, criticize the alt-right and tell you what you're doing wrong, despite the fact that I just found out what the alt-right was. In the vein of Sargon and Tree.
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that, folks. But there are some things that I think everybody could, you know, stand to understand is that everybody is on the, I don't even want to call it a spectrum. We're all in kind of this like four-dimensional space and we move throughout that space, you know, our spectrum of beliefs and different experiences, you know, kind of shift our views a little bit. And intelligent people, when they're being bullied or negged, don't react well to that. And I think that just being a positive role model, and I know one of the things you're going to bring up later, you know, a couple of people that I've, you know, kind of watched a few of their videos that I agree with, that I'm starting to agree with. I haven't gone through their entire discography, so I can't tell you that I can sing all the lyrics of their songs, there are people that just set good examples. And I've started subscribing to some YouTube channels that are YouTube channels I would have never thought just 3 months ago, I would have never thought that I would have even listened to these views. But
yeah, mine's one of them, isn't it?
Yes. And I'm not saying I agree 100% because I don't know everything. But I do know that I started off just a month and a half ago arguing with you from the perspective of a civic nationalist. And now I'm starting to understand. And I think what really got me to at least, I tend to be a very empathetic person. So when I sit down with somebody and they tell me that they have a concern, I don't tell them that their concerns are invalid. I say, well, what are your concerns and why do you have these concerns? And just listening to you talk about certain things that have taken place in the UK that I'm well aware of because I have family members that have been affected firsthand in Sweden, it's frustrating to me because I talked to Bunty and I told Bunty him thing. I was messaging him. And I was trying to get him to understand that this isn't just racism, that people are genuinely concerned because their cities are being overrun and that women can't report this or else it's considered racist. And he's like, he just keeps going on and on. Why did they let them in their country? He doesn't understand. And then I finally, after like more than an hour of like yelling at him on iMessage on my phone, in messaging, I'm getting more and more heated trying to explain to him because you're one of the main topics of our conversation, and we're talking about Kilroy being canceled, and he's just like, oh, we can't have these races, we can't this and that, and I'm like, I don't think you understand a lot of these people that you're angry about. Mm-hmm. They come from they've seen firsthand that their own nations are being overrun and there's nothing they can do about it.
Here's the way I would see this, right? He thinks it's all about him and other brown guys, when I think it's all about us, because these are our homelands and these are our women and these are our children and we are us and we have to secure our existence. And he's incidental to this.
I come from the perspective, and this is where I will listen to the alt-right, is I come from the perspective of I want everybody to be happy. So when I'm talking to people here in Houston, and when I see Black Lives Matter marching and saying Black people are executing our people in the streets, I'm like, then why do we have Black and white people together? I mean, I'm like, you're making the argument for the alt-right. I mean, when I point that out to my leftist friends, then that shuts down their argument.
This is a very common thing. Yeah, you've pointed it out, and as you say it, I realize that this happens all the time. They'll say, you'll get some Black guy who boasts about having white girlfriends. Well, he's making our argument for us. If you get some career woman who boasts that she don't need no man, well, then she's making our argument for us, because there are lots of men who need women.
Yeah.
So, it goes out all and on and on. They cannot help but betray the fact that the alt-right exists for damn good reasons.
The most frustrating part for me was I finally blurted out to him that, and I've told you this, is that I have a young cousin who was firsthand affected in Sweden. And his response was LOL. And I told him exactly. I used... His response in text was LOL. And I said, I just went off and said, I can't believe you just LOL'd at that. And he goes, it was a nervous laugh. And I said, your thumbs don't nervous LOL when someone says that someone's been raped. And I was very graphic in the way that I told him what had taken place. I didn't leave anything to the imagination. And then he wrote it off as, oh, that was a nervous, I'm like, that's not a nervous laugh.
He should be nervous.
I feel like
this is going to, it's exactly honestly,
I'm sorry, I'm crying. But, it's why, just this. This
no,
is
it's
very,
fine. Don't worry about that.
This is very frustrating.
This is exactly the sort of thing, right? He is making a joke out of something that's deadly serious, and
he
must know
he
at some
thinks,
level.
He's even. You know, like, so we ended that conversation. I told him, I was like, I have, and it was like 1 a.m. And I'm trying to get him to understand that, yes, there are racists in the alt-right. Yes, there are racists in the everywhere you go, there are people, racist meaning by the definition of whatever. But every single person who cares about securing the future for their white children are not racists. Like, every person who wants to preserve their own life, liberty, and happiness is not a racist. Like, people who don't want to die are not racist.
See, honest, exactly.
Well,
at this stage, I'm just past caring. You know, for him to...
I'm getting there.
For him to LOL, if he's nervous, if he... Whatever that means, it's not good for us. Whatever that reaction meant,
it's
not good for us.
It really... it changed my relationship with him. I went from thinking that it made me realize, okay, I understand being ignorant of what's going on. Like, I had mentioned Rotherham to him at one point, and he was like, what? And I understand he doesn't know what's going on overseas. I understand. But when I explain it to him and I start sending him links, he no longer has the luxury of ignorance.
Yeah, a lot of Americans and Canadians, I mean, they've never heard of Rotherham. They think it's a joke when you tell them. They think you must be exaggerating.
Because they can't fathom something like that taking place and the police being in a, like, covering
it. Well, he's from India, isn't he?
He's actually born and raised in Canada.
Yes, sorry, I should be more
his
precise.
His parents are.
He's Indian
by blood. But, I mean, and I've only lived in cities that were mixed outside of Stockholm, obviously. But I mean, like, in America, I've lived in all major cities. So it's very normal for me to be in mixed areas. I'm trying to be very peaceful and very civil. And I'm trying not to cut people out of my life and just speak with them rationally. And Jacob has witnessed this over the months that Jacob and I have been talking, and Jacob's over at my house 2 or 3 days a week, you know, when we're recording and doing things. I still have some far left friends that I think are teachable and I'm still working on them.
Yeah.
And I have one friend in particular that I've known her since forever. And we were talking about some of the festival in Sweden that's going on, the Man Free Festival. And I was, she had seen a link I posted on Twitter, and I was explaining to her about, like, all the rape gangs in Sweden. And I was very, what would you say? I didn't really go into much detail, just about how, like, all, you know, the rapes in
You're
Sweden
being a little
have
vague.
Gone. Yeah. I was very vague about things. Right. And so I was sending link after link. I started with the Michael Moore link, which I might share with you, how Michael Moore some years ago was talking about the rape in Sweden, but he didn't give any details about, you know, ethnicity or anything.
God, that's pathetic.
No. He was talking about the Julian Assange thing. How Sweden is going after Julian Assange when they let rapists off left and right, right?
So, right, okay.
So
okay.
I started with that.
Stupid. Yeah.
I knew she could swallow that one. So then I go with the next, and she's just gulping it down. And then I get to the last one that's about, and these are all liberal links. These are all the Guardian, these are all like, this is all like easy for her, right? Milk. And then I get,
you're not hitting her with like a Breitbart link.
Yeah, no. And then I get to the migrant, the whole, the bro, where they're, it's the link with the stats on the migrants. And then that's when she's just like, I got to go to bed. Bye.
And well,
like within 30 seconds.
When she's got 2 hours spare, direct her to my video about the migrant crisis, titled The Migrant Crisis. And it was designed for liberals.
Okay.
So hopefully it gets through to them.
Yeah. And I mean, like
I did call a Jewish politician a cunt at one point, but that was the one time when I was not polite in that video.
Yeah. I've said previously that I try to be very open to anybody who says that they're hurting. And I did this kind of in the beginning, even with BLM, even, you know, I tried to just not say, I didn't say anything publicly. against any groups, whether I think that they have a valid argument or not. And I've never punched right. I've never punched at the alt-right. If I ever do, it'll be to an individual. And it'll be like very direct. It'll be in, like, if I ever punch at a person in the alt-right, it'll be for a specific thing that they said or did. Like, it'll be reactionary. And I'm kind of the same way with any groups.
I think it's, I'm not sure, before we move on, I'm not sure if I should say any more about Bunty King. To me, because that is very interesting. I didn't know that story you told me there.
Yeah, I just...
You know, here's the thing. This is the whole fucking thing about civic nationalism. In the end, he is an outsider to the trials and tribulations of white people who are trying to deal with mass immigration. And he will always want them to calm down. Don't get any ideas, because that puts him in danger. And it's true, it does. That's why I say he's right to be nervous. I also say he's right to be nervous because that solidarity is coming, it's forming. And so, you know, I don't know what to advise someone like him. I think that he should move to India. But the fact that we can talk about whether he'd be happier there, whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is that he is demonstrably preventing white people. He is a sort of obstacle to them developing the solidarity that will be necessary if they are to look after themselves and protect themselves and their women and their children. So this is exactly why civic nationalism is a perfect example of why it's a terrible thing in practice. But supposedly we all adhere to the same values and all believe the same things and all that. But what it actually means in practice is that different racial groups compete and everyone's too afraid to actually point out what's going on.
Yeah. I think what it is kind of teaching me more and more, and this is really, I've only seen this more recently, I think, to this extent, is that there are certain people in my life that I can get along with great. We can talk about video games. We can talk about, you know, keep it very topical. But when it comes to things that matter very deeply, like those topics, there's really only a handful of people outside of now on this podcast that I had shared that with. And it's now that they're out of the country. I found out just in the last few weeks that they're gone. They're in Switzerland now. Her and her entire family, they were forced to continue to live next door to the group that did this the entire time.
Good God, that's just absolutely awful.
Yeah, and they'll never see a day in jail. And she was 13 when it happened. She's 14 now. And I, knowing that that there are people that I will be friends with, and that I can have conversations with, and I can, you know, keep it topical. And then there are people that I can share. I can bear who I like things that hurt, you know. And there are people that I can have these conversations with, and I. Faith, she's one of the people that, you know, I told her she actually installed an app so that I can have a conversation with her. She and I were chit-chatting, and I had said something to her to the effect of, I didn't call her my spirit animal. I don't remember. I said something to her that she was like, "I'm so honored you said that." I don't remember what it was. And she and I will be keeping in touch. There are certain things that she said that really give me hope. But one of the things that, really does kind of scare me off is when, so because I live in a large city and because I'm in a career, and I have been in careers where they're very mixed, diverse, meaning, multiracial. And I work with a lot of people that are very multiracial. I have a lot of photos on the internet of me. And I have a lot of friends that are non-white, and I'm not going to just abandon everybody that I know that's not white because then I live in Houston. We're a minority here. And I think that it's not going to benefit people to take photos of me when I've done a radio interview and one of the DJs happens to be a quarter black and someone takes a photo that was posted on either my Facebook page or, you know, or on Twitter or
somewhere.
And
then they say that you're a race-mixing mud shark.
Yes. and says, oh, look at the eyes she's giving him. And I'm like, first off, I wasn't even looking at that guy. Secondly, it's like, why are you scraping through my Facebook photos and posting them on in other places and calling me a race mixer? That's the kind of stuff that actually pushes people away from even wanting to listen to your message. And no, I mean, for what it's worth, not that, you know how I respond when people call me a race mixer, or like in the comment section when guys ask me how many big BBCs I've sucked, I usually just start naming random numbers. Now I'm like 14, 15. I don't know. I lost track. Like, because it's weird to me that guys who consider them all right seem so obsessed with the idea of a white woman sucking BBC. And
well, hold on a second. Again, this is to do with solidarity, right? This is to do with group solidarity.
Okay.
And it's to do with male nature.
Right? Yes.
If men are going to take the risk, in the risks involved in protecting women, then they need to be assured of those women's loyalty, because otherwise they're just white knighting. They're just, you know, it's just crazy. So this is why those men take that seriously. Well, all of us in the alt-right take this seriously.
Okay, but I'm speaking specifically about the way that they will, like, neg me in the comment sections and asking me, like a couple of the girls that were in your, and I'm talking about, like, the running threads during your millennial, not so much the comment section, but the
live chat.
Yeah, the live chat. Sorry, thank you for that. Where, like, the guys will ask repeatedly, how many BBC have you sucked? And then one day I just asked, I was like, have you noticed that these guys seem pretty obsessed with white girls sucking BBC? And it's weird to me that they see a white woman and that's, like, the first thing that they think of.
No, well, hold on a second. Okay. I think honestly that men, even outside the alt-right, are kind of not obsessed with this, but they're concerned with it. You know, because whenever
you're going to defend them.
Sorry?
You're going to defend them saying that in the chat?
No, I'm not defending them. I'm explaining it.
I will agree that they probably think that. But for them to have to say that in the chat repeatedly, how many BBCs have you sucked? Over and over. I just spit out numbers. Yeah. I'm like 28. Yeah. I don't know. I lost track. How many at a time? Yeah, like, what do you mean?
That in itself is antagonizing, right? That's not going to help. Just say none.
It's disgusting for them to even ask me. The question makes me want to throw up. It's like, it's just the idea of it just gags me, because it's like...
But can you understand why they're asking? It's because...
But I'm married.
Well, they probably don't know that. But it's because of this question of solidarity.
Okay.
Right? This is why it hurt them so much when Lauren Southern was revealed to have had a half-black boyfriend or something when she was 16. It's because, damn it, we thought she was on our side. We thought she would, she would look out for us. So we looked out for her. And now we find out she did this. Now, as it happens, I don't think it's a big deal because she was 16, and the culture tells teenagers to do this stuff. There's propaganda everywhere. So I'm not overly bothered by it. But I can understand why lots of other men were bothered by it.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get them to see the bigger picture. But... nonetheless, I'm not going to laugh at these guys for being concerned with this. It's a very legitimate concern. Because apart from anything else, it shows a lack of, the foresight.
Yes.
In the women. Because the fact is, if you do race mix with a black guy as a high IQ white woman, you're fucking your kids. You know, they're not going to be as high IQ as you. They're not going to be as compassionate, creative as you. They're not, and most of all, they're not going to have your much more solid sense of identity. They're going to be fractured. And then there are the problems that statistically attend black men being with white women, which are violence, infidelity, and divorce, very high divorce rates. So all of this indicates a lack of forward planning on the part of the women. A lack of awareness, a lack of respect for her reproductive capacities. And also, most of all, it demonstrates a lack of loyalty to her men, to her tribe.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like, is the last. It's just a fucking disaster. And this, of course, is exactly why this is encouraged in the media today, because they know that it demoralizes white men.
And
you know, that's why you get white, and black men know this as well, which is why they can never shut up about the fact if they've got a white girlfriend, they just love to talk about it because they know it really pisses white men off.
Having lived in cities with, I've told Jacob this, having lived in, like, I lived in New York, lived in Los Angeles and San Francisco, just catcalling is one of those things that is, I've rarely been catcalled by white men. And if I think I actually told you this once, that white guys, when they try to like catch a glance, like even in a bar, they're very kind of secretive about it. Like they'll kind of like, they'll like look up and kind of look over at your butt, but like look right back at their glass real quick, or they'll like act like they're looking at something else that's passing, or they'll pretend to pick something up and look at you.
Yeah, and this is a really interesting thing because it's to do with the different dynamics. In an all-white society, white men would be approaching white women in that way, you know, and the white women would expect that, and it would all work, right? There would be harmony there. But when you've got black men or Muslim men who are much more forward at this kind of stuff,
do you think it's their culture? Because
I don't care. I don't know, and I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Because part of what was so such a turn up, like, you know, I even explained this to Tree once, that one of the things that's such a turn off for a lot of women, even women who don't care about the race aspect of it, but for a lot of women, what's such a turn off to like non-white men is just the way that they approach you and the way that they like come at you is so aggressive that it makes you feel like you're being assaulted, even before you've really even had the chance to get to know a guy. Like I've had multiple occasions where like a work truck of day laborers has almost run me off the road on the freeway trying to like look out their window at me, or like I've had non-white men
you're talking about non-white guys,
yeah, day laborers.
Well,
like
this is why, yeah but this is why we keep saying that they shouldn't be in our societies, because they go after our women and our women are uncomfortable with it, or else they go along with it, and in neither case is that good for white men.
Yeah, it's just, I don't think all women go for that. Like I know I've talked to white women who won't, okay, I've talked to liberal white women who won't admit this publicly, but they'll say that, they'll say like, oh, it's not that I don't like blacks and Mexicans, but I'd never date them because they're so aggressive. Like that, it's not that I'm racist, but they just feel
like, there's lots of reasons that you should be.
I'm just saying that, like, even white liberal women, and it's, you know, it's not 100% of the time, but a lot of times if a guy approaches you at a bar, the culture is so different. Like, they're taught that they just come up and grab you and you're theirs. Like, they just keep at it until they wear you down and you go home with them.
And this is ridiculous, right? This is exactly why white men should not tolerate them in our societies. Right, because it's in danger. It entirely upsets the harmony. My friend Pale Hominid and I did a Skype conversation two years ago now. I can't remember what it was called, but it was like white people and dancing or something like that, and courtship. White people, courtship, and dance. It was something like that. And we talked about, because he's in America and he sees this kind of stuff a lot, and it was about how the fairly delicate dynamics of a successful white society are completely disrupted by the presence of large numbers of non-white men and women as well, but especially the men. And it's because they are far more sexually aggressive. And, you know, it's the same in Europe with the Muslims. They will simply say to a woman, I want to marry you. I want to make you pregnant. And those are things that women love to hear. It turns them on.
It's very ironic. No, that's very ironic, because in Sweden right now, they're looking at passing a law so that you have to get like actual affirmative consent, almost like in written form, isn't it, Jacob?
Yeah. Sorry, and who are the only men who will take that seriously?
Yeah, exactly.
The lesbians. The only people who'll take it seriously are the white Swedish men.
That's what I mean by lesbians.
Yeah. Oh, right. I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But the trouble is that this is exactly how they become feminized. It's because they are perpetually demoralized, emasculated, browbeaten by their own culture.
Yeah.
To the extent that, as it is today, no wonder Swedish women are looking for testosterone from brown men. I mean, it's an absolute tragedy. It's a disgrace. Yeah. But this is what happens when a society destroys itself.
I found it in Texas. My husband's of German descent, but his family has been here for quite some time, but they're mostly German. And they live, they're from South Texas. He was homeschooled out in the middle of nowhere. They have hundreds of acres. They're very, very country. And he, his father lives next door to his uncle. They live next door to a cousin. They live next door. I mean, they all live like within, they have acreage and then they have acreage. So it's very, they own like just large spaces, and these aren't rich people. I'd mentioned this on another live stream I was on. These aren't, when people say, oh, I own land, the first thing someone thinks of is, oh, you come from money. This is very inexpensive land out in the middle of nowhere. It's agricultural land, so it's also taxed differently. So it's very inexpensive. They were homeschooled because they weren't anywhere near anywhere near a school. It was like half an hour from the closest town. They're very different out there. Like when we go out to visit them, that's where we're headed tomorrow, which is, why I had to do the live stream today. We're going to be there for Christmas. Things are so different in the country than they are in the city. And that's one of the reasons why I still have hope is all of these problems that we're dealing with, like we talk about the migration and everything. These migrants are going to the big cities where there's welfare. If we're going to have areas where people are going to survive, it's going to have to take place away from the big cities. There is still land, there's still dirt. I don't know about resources, but if people want to go till the land and, kill cows and make their own bullets.
I'm just sick of giving up land. I'm sick of giving up towns and cities.
That's actually one of the problems, is that we are running out of like legal space that can be owned.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If I look at Scotland, there's Edinburgh and there's Glasgow, and there are the towns in between it. And then there are villages. Well, I don't know what the solution is, but I would say it should start with getting as many of them to self-deport as possible, and then looking for ways to deport as many more of them as possible, because this is not going to end well for us. And these are our ancestral homelands. So we should be the priority, not Bunty King or any of his co-ethnics. And that's not to say that I hate them. It's just to say that they shouldn't be in our countries. I would never, ever reply to that story like that one by going, LOL. I don't need to. But he does need to, because he can't afford to take this seriously. It's critical.
I was trying desperately to get him to understand how serious the story was without making it personal, because I didn't want, I didn't want to use the whole personal experience with that. And I had already told you, Jacob knows about it. I told him like a year ago, like I told Jacob way back when we were first kind of chit-chatting, right? I told Jacob about it back in the day. I told my husband back when it happened. I was tagged in the post when it very first happened on Facebook. So because I was tagged in the post, all of my friends found out what happened at once. The post left nothing to the imagination. One thing not to talk about our friend, our Indian friend, not to make this conversation about him, people like him, do, and this is something that he said, he continues to say the West is the best. And so I challenged him on Twitter with that. I said, well, if you're going to say the West is the best, that is a racist, what I told him is that's a racist phrase, because the West was built by Westerners. By Westerners, you mean Europeans. By Europeans, you mean white people. I'm paraphrasing what I said. And I said, so what you're saying is if the West is the best, then white people are the best, Bunty. And he's like, no, because get this, I shit you not. He said, Europeans would not have considered themselves white back then.
That's just drivel.
That was his response. And I don't know.
That's just what a silly thing for him to say.
I'm guessing, and I know I'm from the haplogroup H1, which are all white. That's the last, you know, that's the last of the last, the evolutionary chain. I think he thinks, and from what we've, and I'm using him as an example because he's the most recent person that I've kind of had this back and forth with, but I've had this conversation.
Yes. I understand. I don't want this to be about him either.
Yeah. But I've had this conversation with multiple leftist friends who genuinely believe that if you replace every person in Sweden with people from Africa, Sweden remains Swedes. He believes that Swedes, in fact, this was part of our conversation before I exploded with my story about my cousin. He believes that Sweden is a passport, and that if, because we were talking about Swedes, and I go, no, Swede is an ethnicity. And he's like, no, if you become Swedish. I go, Bunty, I've taken 23andMe. I know
how to become Indian. Can I become Indian?
That's what I asked him. I go, so if I move to China, am I Chinese? He goes, oh, well, I guess.
Oh, for God's sake.
Because I've taken my blood test. I'm just, for everyone who wants to know, I've actually 23andMe'd. I'm 3/4 Irish, 1/4 Swedish. And that's what I thought I was to begin with, because that's what I'm Irish and Swedish. My mother's full Irish. My father's half Irish, half Swedish. I've known that. I took the blood test just because, and I think my Swedish is watered down with a little bit of like German and something else, just a slight bit. But I'm pretty much what I thought I was. There were no surprises there. So.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and to me, it wasn't even about heritage or race or ethnicity. It was about, I have epilepsy, which I'm a fellow epileptic. That was one of our bonding moments, was we were...
Solidarity.
Yes, we were bonding over seizures, seizure talk. But I was more concerned about if there are any... because I wasn't born I developed epilepsy. As I got older, I was just curious if I had any inheritable traits. And so I took the test just to see what my odds were. And the only thing negative that I have is I have a higher odds of developing a heroin addiction if I were to take, like, I would have a higher odds of opioid addiction.
Right. Okay.
But I don't take opioids.
Good. So, good. I'm glad. How did we get onto this, though? I've forgotten how we got onto this.
We were talking about the West is the best and the Sweden thing. Yeah, okay, yeah. West is the best and the Sweden thing. And then I was talking about, like, you know, the Swedish and Irish and how I've taken a blood test. Didn't take the blood test because I'm green eyes and blonde hair and I absorb all the light particles in the room. So I think I know I'm white. But I cared more about my... the medical background was my
but so this is all about the why is this about his civic nationalism?
I believe is that what it's called? See, I want to apologize to everyone who's listening. I'm really new to a lot of these terms. I've had to, every time I hear someone say something, I have to Google it. Like, I just found out what the number 14 stood for, like, in the last few weeks. I'm new, so every time I hear something, have to go look it up. So civic nationalism, which obviously, I mean, I'm pretty sure I know what that means. It's like, as opposed to ethno-nationalism, it means that you're,
it's the Proud Boy thing. It's the Gavin McInnes thing where we're proud of our culture and it doesn't matter what race we are, we all subscribe to the same values.
Yeah.
You know,
which is what I've spent the last however many years that I've even, anytime I've ever given it thought, I should say, that's how I would have described myself. Because I've never had to give it.
A lot of people do. And, you know, it's a sort of center-right or, I mean, honestly, some people would call it far-right to be proud of your culture and want to preserve it and, you know, have a sense of the nation. It is a type of nationalism, I guess, Well, at least it calls itself nationalism.
Nationalism works wonderfully until you go through a national disaster and you realize that people actually do think in groups and that your group doesn't effing matter anymore. Like,
well, it doesn't even. It's obviously the disaster thing is always on the cards. Yeah, but I don't think Civic nationalism even works. I don't think it even works well in normal times, because look at Sweden. Sweden isn't undergoing an economic disaster yet. It's on the cards. But it's in peacetime just now. Everything's fine. And yet you've got white Swedish girls being gang raped by...
are you familiar with how Swedes tend to ignore one another and they're non-confrontational, and Swedes tend to be like lemmings? Are you familiar with how Swedish people are?
Yeah, but I don't want to get too specific on Sweden, because this also applies to Germany and France and Britain as well. You know, it's the same thing. The point I'm making is that civic nationalism can seem to work if you're sort of stretched, if you're ignoring certain problems. But even then, eventually, I think it will blow up anyway, because if there is some kind of disaster, economic or whatever, infrastructural, then suddenly people will remember, my ethnic group does matter to me. That is where I get my safety, my sense of safety from. And it's what I belong to. It's where I get my sense of myself from. Obviously, despite disregarding individual, of course, everyone's a unique individual. I know that. But still, we tend to have an attachment, acknowledged or not, to our ethnic group, to our race. And that comes up in times of disaster. I mean, God knows the number of lessons that are going to be learned when Europe goes through another economic fallout or whatever, huge recession. Because there are going to be many people who have been trying to believe in civic nationalism or obliviously believing in civic nationalism, who are going to suddenly find out the hard way that it's all been an illusion all along.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I have, just by listening to some of the more vocal, you know, more respectable members of the movement, is that I think I've come to the conclusion that regardless of how I feel about the alt-right, and regardless of how I feel about the survival of the, or could feel about the survival of the alt-right, that the alt-right genuinely cares about me and my survival. And that's something, it almost feels like the obstinate child parent/parent relationship, where, you know, the child can be like, I don't really like your decisions. And the parent's like, I will always love you. I understand that the alt-right actually does want the survival of all people. And that's something that I started to realize at the very beginning. And it's because I didn't start watching alt-right videos with the presumption that they were just a bunch of racist white supremacists. I started watching the videos with an open mind, and realizing there was one Jared Taylor interview in particular. In fact, he was being interviewed by a black or a very dark skinned woman from CNN. And that surprised me, because people tear me. Okay. People tear me a new asshole because 6 or 7 years ago, I got interviewed by a quarter black guy, but this woman was very dark skinned. I think she might not have been black, but Jared Taylor got interviewed by her not long ago on CNN. It was a very good interview. I'll send you a link when we're done here. And I haven't seen the entire interview, but everything that I saw in the interview up to the point that I've seen, I was like really blown away with how much I agreed with him. And Jacob and I one day were sitting in a Chick-fil-A, and I was telling him, you know, and of course I'm using code language because we're out in public. So I'm like, you know, using all these acronyms and euphemisms and all this. And I'm talking about it, and I'm like, I don't know how he didn't just get up and like strangle her when he called her a white supremacist, or when she called him a white supremacist, I meant to say, because he's not. Like, he wants, and he states this very clearly numerous times, that he wants all people to have their own place. Like, he wants Africans to be happy in Africa. He wants, you know, he wants Swedish people to be happy with their Swedish culture. He wants, you know, he wants France to be happy with French culture. He wants, you know, Chinese people to be happy with French culture, or sorry, with Chinese culture. He doesn't want white people to rule the entire planet and wipe out all the other races. And I think that's what people think that he wants. And because I didn't go...
Well, that's because it's been modeled. The whole thing has been shaped that way so that any white... You know, the whole debate, the narrative has been set this way so that any white person who advocates for white interests or says that they even care about the survival of the white race is immediately thought of as some kind of crazy person driven by hate. But that's a manufactured narrative. I mean, you mentioned, you used the word racist several times, and in the live chat, people were saying to me that I should explain to you the origins of that word. It was invented by Leon Trotsky, I believe in the 20s or 30s, precisely to break down the sense of solidarity among Russians. Because he knew that if they had ethnic solidarity, then that would be a block to accepting communism.
Oh. So I didn't know the history of it, but just to let people know, when I use that word, it means absolutely shit to me. I mean, I'll gladly call I'm a racist, bigot, sexist, homophobic, whatever the fuck you want to call me. I'm a fascist, whatever. I don't care. Those words literally mean fuck all to me. So that's why when I heard that the alt-right was like some racist neo-Nazi, I'm like, really? Like, isn't everything?
Obviously, you can understand why it's, I mean, that word has been created and popularized.
Yeah. Okay.
Precisely. Yeah. Because no one ever says that the Japanese are racist or the Chinese are racist. It doesn't even come into it. No one cares. But it's always directed at white people.
The Jewish people.
Well, it was invented by a Jew. Yeah. Okay. It was invented by a Jew. That's another thing I could have added. But yeah, of course, no one ever blames them for wanting a wall and all the rest of it. So it really is something that has been tailor-made to attack and undermine white people. Who are just wanting the same things that everyone else has, you know? It's a trick. That word is a trick.
Yeah, I mean, I am on a path. I am 100% positive beyond the shadow of a doubt. Even if I were to get a traumatic brain injury, there's no chance in hell I'm ever going to end up on the far left. That's not even humanly possible. If things go well, neither will my children. I think getting married and settled down has helped change me for the good. I mean, obviously, because I married a good person. I think that I'm moving further to the right, regardless of what my views are, as far as like, I do still consider myself a little bit libertarian. I'm not opposed to social services for people like disability, you know, helping veterans.
There's very, very few people in the alt-right who would object to that.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Well, you know, this is the thing. When you're labeled far right, people think, oh, well, you must just want the poor and the disabled to perish. Yeah. But actually, that has just never, I mean, if you look at, I wouldn't name names, but basically the leading lights of the alt-right, as I know them, are all perfectly happy with the idea of welfare state, as long as it's healthily directed and channeled, so that it doesn't lead to atrophy and, you know, self-sabotage.
But welfare state's only, I mean, I live in a welfare state within my own home. Not really, actually. We keep our finances separate because we own businesses, but my husband and I joke that we live in a socialist house, and all homes should operate in socialism. Actually, we live in a monarchy. My children are the ones in charge. But it's more of a joke than anything. But it's an aristocracy, I should say, an aristocracy, not a monarchy. But it's when you have a society where everyone feels as though they are related to everyone else, which is what I sort of felt like during my childhood in Nacka, Sweden, which was like a suburb of Stockholm. It's easier to feel like if, you know, the woman down the street, you know, is costing everybody $150,000 because she's been sick all year, last couple of years, before she dies. It doesn't feel like an imposition on the system because she paid in for so long and because she's part of the family, she's part of the community.
Exactly.
And, you know, when somebody got an abscessed tooth and had to get it pulled and, you know, was took 6 weeks off work or whatever, they were whatever things. I'm just thinking of things that
they're
one of us. Yeah, exactly.
They're one of us. So it's fine, you know.
Yeah. And there's not that like hatred versus when you live.
And also there is less likelihood of them cheating the system precisely because they know it would be a betrayal of their fellows, you know, of their co-ethnics. Obviously, in reality, it's much warmer and more human than that. It would be a betrayal of the other people in my town, or it'd be a betrayal of my fellow Swedes, or something like that. You know. Whereas, by contrast, if it's immigrants, if it's non-whites, there is already a divide. So there is not. It's rather more difficult for them to feel that it's a betrayal.
Yeah.
For them to cheat the welfare system, it's not really a betrayal.
I would even go beyond like the race thing, just like the outsider thing. Even just being in a society where it's just too big. Like I live in a country of 320 million people that we know of. And it's too big. People don't feel connected. Yet when I go out to the country, you're nicer to people because you know you're probably going to run into the same faces again. Like you're more likely to hold the door open for a complete stranger. You're more likely to pick up trash that isn't your own trash. You're like, it's cleaner out there. People take care of, like you'll see somebody sweeping a sidewalk that they don't even own and emptying things, dirt into the dustbin. And you're like, wait, is that the shop owner? Oh no, that's the shop owner from next door, but he's taking care of the place because this entire area is his home.
And Annika, this is what every white city, every white town, every white village used to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely learning a lot. I have a lot more to learn. I'm not fighting with you in your comment section anymore. I've got a few people that I'm talking to, that I've kind of already mentioned a few names. There's actually a couple of people that I found through your millennial that I'm not going to name drop right now, that aren't even that. They're newer YouTubers that kind of piqued my interest.
That's the whole point of millennial.
Yeah. So, and I do tend to
daunting
just,
thing.
Just let me say this.
I know it's a daunting thing, and it's new, and you think, oh God, have I just discovered? Am I sort of jumping down the rabbit hole here? Because it's contrary to everything that you've heard, that you've been told, that society has encouraged you to believe. So yeah, it's daunting, and you think, well, how fast should I take this and how far should I go? But I'm not worried. You know, I think that what we're doing here is simply rediscovering what our ancestors knew instinctively. We're undoing a lot of mental distortions that we've been subjected to over the last century.
Yeah, well, I've tried to explain to my leftist friends that the alt-right, I'm so used to calling it the AR because I don't even use words like this in the real world. I try to explain to them that the alt-right is really just a reaction to all the hatred and everything, you know, whether you believe that to be true or not, this is how I have to explain it to them. That it's okay to be white is really a reaction to being told it's not okay to be white for years. That just all of this hate and vitriol that you're being told. And I even have white friends that say, well, I don't feel that way. I'm like, well, then you're not paying the fuck attention. I'm like, you don't feel that way because you're also one of the white people who's pandering to your fellow white folks. You're also one of those people saying, I hate being white. And that's the kind of stuff that really grosses me out is when I have white friends who talk about how much they wish they weren't white.
Oh, that's just awful. That's just appalling. You know, for anyone to wish to be something other than what they are. And for that to have been the result of lots of brainwashing, lots of conditioning, lots of criticism and critiquing. That's a sign that your society is very ill. If it's telling its main ethnic group that they should not want to, that they should be ashamed of being that, and that they should want to be something else, anything else, that's a sign that your society is very ill, and probably not under your own control anymore.
Yeah. There was a guy. I am going to pull away from a lot of this content coming the beginning of this new year, just because it's so incredibly depressing for me. You know, talking about the migrant crisis in Sweden and all that. I stay up at night a lot, really late, just stressed out about everything that's going on. So I'm going to try to kind of bring a lot of my content back to more the middle majority and stuff that's, I wouldn't say topical. That's the wrong word, but I would say more things that are a little more appealing to a broader audience that's not things that I am more familiar with, because I don't think that I am qualified to speak on certain topics yet. So I'm going to you know, use my channel to talk about things that are important to me and things that I feel, you know, like I have a robot now that I've got online that I'm going to be working with, that's going to be doing some live streaming. And then I've got some people that I'm going to be interviewing that have nothing to do with politics. And I'm going to try to pull away from politics in 2008, a little. I'm going to pull away from the depressing topics. I'm going to try not to talk about CNN. I'm going to try not to just harp on the anti-SJW. I'm probably still going to bash feminists, because that's kind of been my thing since forever. I've been bashing feminists since I started my period. I think 2018, I'm going to try to allow my channel to reflect kind of more of like a peaceful, sorry, I'm slurring like crazy now. Trying to allow my channel to reflect a more positive, kind of more upbeat kind of message. It's not to say that I won't ever discuss these topics, but I think that it's dragging me down. When I go through my previous videos and I see rape in Sweden, migrants rape in Sweden, Sweden rape, I'm like, fuck, dude.
Here's something I would say about this, right? When you first discover this stuff, you do sort of become addicted to this, these endless horror stories. You know, oh, another rape, oh, another ghetto is another no-go zone, another murder. And it's depressing, and it becomes sort of like pornography, like decline porn. But eventually, well, there are two choices. You can either back away from that and just sort of say, oh, no, I'll just concentrate on nice things and kid yourself that everything's fine. Or you can sort of keep going and get through that stage, that early shock stage, and reach a sort of level of acceptance. I mean, I never look up these stories anymore, because I just know what it is. You know, and even when the terror attacks happen, right, okay, it's another terror attack. But that's not acceptance of the situation. It's not like surrender to it. It's just understanding, okay, this is it. This is our societies now, and this is going to be the case for some time.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why we have to talk about it.
I would say that I'm the latter of the two. I'm not going to ignore. I think it's more that I don't need my... Okay, Black Pigeon Speaks is in the chat. Thank you, Jacob, for letting me know. I just got a warm fuzzy. Sorry. He's one of my favorite of all time. I bought one of his t-shirts. I might buy 10 more if he needs... Please let me know if you need to make the break so that you can get your 50. And I'll buy as many as I need to and give them out as Christmas presents. Black Pigeon Speaks. Anyway, to get back on topic, I think that I am, I know what's going on because I hear firsthand what's going on over there. But I do get to a point, and this is where it actually, so me and my husband have an amazing relationship. We always have. We haven't fought. We don't have any issues, except when, like, even Jacob sees, like, I slam my effing door and then I get a message on Hangouts, my husband, like a whole row of question marks. And I'm like, I'm angry. This happened this morning. And Jacob gets all my Hangout messages because he has my computer. I have multiple computers in this room. And then I get a row of question marks from my husband. He's like, is everything okay? And I'm like, Prime Minister, I was like just watching a video. Prime Minister, former Prime Minister of Sweden, is telling Swedes that they need to accept rapists, and he's like, "I wish you quit. I wish you'd stop like watching those videos." And like it, we have this amazing relationship, and everything's going great. He's like, "Will you please stop filling your head with this?" And then he also knows that every single morning, as soon as my alarm goes off, I check Twitter, and I'm just in this frenzy fighting with fucking people. And then later, I have to go delete all the tweets before I get my 12-hour ban. And I'm just like, I'm so angry with people. Like, I can't even use, I now have to use code words on Twitter and people know what I'm saying. But I have to use words. I have to misspell certain words intentionally so that I don't get banned.
Because, yeah, well, that's the situation we're all in on.
Like,
on
I use the word migraines instead of like the migraine crisis. Right, I talk about the migraine crisis.
Right. Yeah, I see. I don't know. I think I would just want to urge you not to feel guilty about this. Because this is the thing. I think that's why you're watching all these things. It's because you're looking for evidence that your suspicions are correct, because you feel very guilty about your suspicions.
I still have family over there. And this is what they, I mean, I still am very close with a lot of my Swedish side of my family. And so I get, and then my Irish side of my family is very liberal. So when they talk about this, they don't talk about these subjects. When they talk about anything political, it's very much pro-Obama, anti-Trump stuff.
But you know better than that.
I'm, come on, I'm a Mensa member. I'm not,
but some of the cleverest people are some of the best at deluding themselves. I mean, I could go on about that, but it is.
I'm Swedish, I'm not retarded.
Well, I think I would just urge you not to fall away from this stuff, because it is, you're a highly intelligent, capable woman,
and
you can reach other women.
I'm doggone it, people like me. I said, and doggone it, people like me. It's a
But the point is that you can reach other women.
So that was important. That was one thing that I did want to kind of one footnote, is that by me still appealing to certain friends of mine that are on the left, I do have some people that I've not given up hope on, that I feel are intelligent, and that it's a matter of them just getting the right, you know, the right seeds, I should say. So a lot of my friends I had to give up hope on. I blocked a significant portion of my friends list during Hurricane Harvey, because apparently a city who voted for Hillary Clinton, which is, you know, primarily made up of minorities, apparently we're all a bunch of Nazis and we deserve to drown.
Yeah, there were a lot of people saying that Houston or Harris County broadly had it coming.
Yeah, and then be careful if you donate money to us. I mean, it was just one after another. And I have people that know me, and it's almost like they forgot that they know somebody who lives in Houston. And so while Jacob and I were actually involved I was very fortunate. Jacob had messaged me and said, "Well, it looks like water's coming in my house. I'll talk to you later." And then, you know, a few hours later, I get a message from him saying, "Well, the water didn't come in. It's receding." I was fortunate water didn't come in my house, but it came. The worst I got was massive amounts of fire ants, which I still have. Our house is surrounded by fire ants, but that's the worst we have at our house. But just to see floods of friends, no pun intended, on Facebook that are just laughing, while it peppered in between posts of friends that are losing everything they have. So I've got, you know, post of a friend who just lost $350,000 house that their insurance isn't going to cover, FEMA isn't going to cover, nobody's going to cover, them and their family is out in the streets. They have nowhere to go. Peppered with, ha-ha, LOL, fucking Nazis. Just like every other post was either somebody losing everything they have or somebody laughing about everybody, all these Nazis losing everything they have. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a depressing sign that America is polarizing. I mean, the two sides don't even want to talk to each other anymore. They don't even care about each other anymore.
Yeah, the fires in California, you didn't see anything like that. I didn't see one post making mockery of the fires in California and how these fucking liberals should all lose their homes. I didn't see anything like that. Like, I don't see that.
Yeah, but I would guess that's because California does not have a reputation. I mean, well, California has a reputation for being liberal.
That's what I'm saying.
And largely, you know, Mexican.
But that's what I'm saying is nobody was punching and saying, oh, these fucking elitists, these millionaires. Nobody was saying things like that.
These white supremacists.
Yeah. Nobody was making fun of these people that were losing their homes. Like, it's a very shitty. I don't care if you are a Nazi skinhead. I don't think it's fair to say that somebody deserves to lose their home. I mean, outside of,
no,
like,
there's some appalling things. I mean, I remember when Baked Alaska, it looked like he was going to lose his eyesight, and there were liberals just mocking him for that. I was just stunned by this.
I barely knew Baked Alaska, and we had followed each other on Twitter by that point. I think I had mentioned at one point to you that he had made a really funny song on SoundCloud, and so I started following him on Twitter. He followed me back. And I was messaging him on Twitter, DMing him, saying, you know, hey, you know, if there's anything I can do, please let me know. If you end up setting up a fund, please let me know. You know, I'll spread it around. I'll donate to it. Please let me know, dude. Just, you know, keep us all. I know I don't share your views, but please let me know how I can help. And he didn't. He was silent. Well, it's because he couldn't. I didn't realize he was actually blind.
Yeah. I don't think he was. Yeah, I mean, I've done a hangout with him, and he talked about
his recovery. I saw it.
But yeah, the point is, the reason I mentioned that is simply to illustrate that
the hatred
liberals have a huge amount of hatred for anyone right of center.
It's so gross,
especially
to me.
Nationalists. Oh, it's disgusting. But, it's sadistic.
But when it came to the Hurricane Harvey, the irony of it is that there were black people stuck on their rooftops on Twitter begging for assistance, mothers and grandmothers that were stuck on their rooftops the dialysis machines. They were stuck in their homes. They couldn't get out. They were, excuse me. I know I'm going to burp any second now. They were stuck. They were unable. I'm having a Merry Christmas. They were unable to get out of their homes. They were stuck on the rooftops, and then they were being told by liberals on Twitter that they were Nazis. And these are, like, black people. And so it's just, it was so ironic that a majority minority city is being told that they're white supremacists.
Well, I'm guessing it's because liberals elsewhere in America just are ignorant as to the current state of that city. And they think of it as, oh, it's in the South. It's going to be full of racists and rednecks and Nazis.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of myopia in liberals. They don't really know anything about the rest of them. It's amazing. They think they're so fucking worldly and educated and all that. And they're really not.
I think that's one of the reasons why I could never really, even when I, you know, I call myself a former liberal, even though I shared, you know, my views on homosexuality and stuff remain the same. That's where it comes down to. I'm about the individual. I really don't care what somebody wants to do with their own body, as long as it's with another consenting adult. What it really came down to for me, it was very difficult for me to embrace liberalism as, like, just an ideology because of the way that they are so myopic, which is the word you just used. But it was just, I don't know. I could never just fully blindly embrace something. And I think,
yes, I know.
So,
but you are still subject to the, you know, the mores of your time. And I think you're very worried about, I mean, I think you're very concerned with the loss of the less fortunate, to the extent that, and of course, non-white races tend to be less fortunate, less successful, and so on. So I think you feel you're still very much in that headspace of, I mustn't be apathetic towards them, and I mustn't care primarily about my own race.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, if you have me on again, we can go into some details about, you know, my past experience with kind of working with underserved youth. You know, that's a topic that I attempted to get into with, you know, on Bunty's stream, but that was uneventful. That was definitely an eye-opening experience for me. I spent some years, you know, working in.
That was one of your red pilling moments, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was like one of those. Why the fuck is this group not succeeding? Maybe we can force feed information into them, and maybe we can make them go to college, and maybe this and this and this and that can just work. Maybe we can just make it work. And then you just come to a point where you realize, like, yeah, no, this isn't working. And that also bled into the time that I was doing that. The very end, when I realized that I couldn't do it anymore, it was right around the time BLM fired up. And all of a sudden, I had students walking in telling me that I was white this and that. And it's like, okay, get the fuck out of my class. I was like, yeah. You realize I'm paying to be here. I'm not a paid instructor. I'm an after.
This is it. Though, right? White people do all of this, and then they still get lambasted. Yeah. They still get told that they're racist. They still haven't done enough. They've never, ever done enough.
Well, I was hesitant.
It's absolutely unbelievable.
I was hesitant to bring this up in front of the alt-right, because when I do bring this up to, you know, like, the more further right conservatives, I guess, would that be the right? I don't really know if they identify as conservative. But when I bring this up to more, you know, right-leaning people, it's usually like a LOL, you learned your lesson.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds like you went into that quite sort of green.
Very much so. I thought, well, the reason the little black kids don't go on to be engineers and scientists is because they're not given the opportunities that white kids are given. We just need to pay attention, and we just need, you know, I had that very... And then I realized that it had very little to do with that. It had a lot more to do with things that take place at home. That it's not the teachers, it's not the schools, it's not the mentors, it's their home situations. And if their parents gave a flying fuck about what happens in their lives, the children would have much better odds. But
that gets us into the quagmire of how to rehabilitate these people and so on. And yeah. I honestly think that we should first and foremost be considering, well, is it our job? I don't know. But I think that our first priority should be how to rehabilitate our own people so that we don't feel guilty and we're not emotionally blackmailing each other. There's some prick in the chat right now trying to make me feel guilty for caring about white people. This goes on and on.
Well, okay, so if I do believe that they're, and I don't fault any people of any color who want to help anybody of any other color either. I don't think that you have to just focus on your own gender or your own race or your own this or that or whatever. You can focus on whoever the fuck you want. I'm coming back to my individualism. If you want to give money to any organization that supports anything, if you don't have Down syndrome, but you want to give your money to an organization that helps people with Down syndrome, do it. I mean, that's just what I'm saying. If you have two legs and you want to give your money to an organization that helps people with one leg, do it. If you're a white person, you want to give your money to an organization that helps black people, do it. Do whatever you want to do. I'm just saying, hey, as an individual, spend your money how you want. Okay? I'm just saying, as an individual.
I would say that white people should first and foremost support
white
people.
Well, Annika, right now, today, on December 22nd at 6:42 p.m., is not saying those words. What I'm saying is that you can spend your money however the hell you want, but... I think that it would be more advantageous to minorities if people within their own groups cared enough to step forward and actually help the people within their groups. It does not help when the majority of people that are forming these after-school programs, like robotics programs, for Black and Latino youth are white. Because what it shows these youth is that like all the roboticists or all the people that are successful are white people. And so black kids, it's very difficult for black teenagers or black, you know, fifth graders to imagine themselves going on to be a scientist or an engineer or even a technician.
Yes, I know. But this is exactly why they should be in their own countries. They should have their own ethnostates.
Aren't roboticists in Africa. Not really. I mean, there's maybe five. I know them all.
Yeah, I know, but doesn't that tell you something?
The patriarchy. The patriarchy.
We can agree on, let's just agree on that for now. It's the patriarchy.
Hashtag diamonds. I don't know. We strip mined out all the engineers or something, right? I don't know.
Crazily, yeah. I mean, obviously we gave them everything, and yet they still can't do robotics.
They was kings. So can I tell one really funny story now that I'm drunk? I can't believe I'm going to tell this publicly.
Are you sure you want to?
Oh, Jacob's like giving me that look. So, you know, one of my favorite YouTubers outside of Black Pigeon Speaks, he's a different genre. I think I told you the story. I told you this story the day after it happened.
I can't remember. You need to be more specific.
Medicare.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay. So if you guys aren't familiar with Medicare, he's an amazing shit poster. Mr. Medicare. So I have little AirPods that were tucked in my ears, and I have like this little thing that was over my, and it was really cold night. So I was all bundled up in my bed, like a little, you know, like a little Swede. And it's like between 1 and 2 in the morning, and I'm laying there and I'm half asleep and I'm listening to We Was Kings. It says We Was Kings video. Oh, I'll have to tweet it out. It's so funny. If you want to follow me on, or if you just want to go to Annika Skywalker on Twitter, you don't even have to follow me. I'll tweet it out. I was listening to it and I'm half asleep, and all of a sudden he gets to some point in the video where he's got like these guys are taunting a Jewish guy, these black guys who are trying to tell everybody in the city of New York. I think they're in Brooklyn. They're telling everybody that the original Jews were black. And
go on.
The original Israelites are black, so they pretty much are saying that like everything that's good in the world was created by black people, and everything that's not good in the world was not, right? So it's a really funny video. And this, like, I've been told that white people are aliens. I've actually, like, Black Hitler,
Gazi Kodo, I think
him, yeah. Black Hitler, the guy, anyway, he like has his own theories for where white people came from too. Anyway, so I'm listening to this and I'm like half asleep. All of a sudden, Medicare breaks into some part of the video where all of a sudden I just start laughing. I start laughing so hard that I curl over and I feel like I'm about to get like a hernia. So then I have to pee. So I get out of bed and it's dark and I can barely see the light coming through the bathroom that attaches to my bedroom. So I'm trying to walk, I'm laughing, and I'm trying not to wake up my husband. So I'm laughing and I'm curled over and I'm pushing on my stomach, but I feel like I have to pee. So I'm trying to get to the bathroom and I step on my cat. And so I'm like, and then I make it. So I'm laughing. I'm about to pee. I'm stepping on my cat. And then I go to grab for the towel rack and I almost rip my towel rack off. And my husband gets up and thinks I'm having a seizure. And so he's like, oh my God, are you okay? And then I wake up one of my daughters who starts screaming in the next bedroom. So I'm like laughing my ass off. And I hadn't thought to take the AirPod out of my ears. So it's because all I hear is Medicare in my ear. And I'm laughing so hard, I'm about to piss myself. So I'm about to piss. My husband thinks I'm having a seizure. My daughter's screaming in the next room and my cat's freaking out. And so I almost ripped a towel rack off my, and I finally make it in the bathroom and I sit down. And my husband thinks I'm crying at this point. He's like, are you okay? What's the matter? And I'm like trying to explain to him, but I know he's going to be really pissed off if I tell him that I'm watching a black supremacist video on YouTube at 2 a.m. So.
Yes. Yeah, so indeed. Cool. Well, Mr. Metzger is hilarious, and I'm going to be watching his forthcoming videos on the Crouch Saga.
Yeah. If you guys, anybody who's listening has been following, I know that there's a lot of back and forth between some members of the alt-right and some members of the skeptic community. It's obviously not the alt-right community and the skeptic community. And that's another thing that I've tried to explain to Bunty. He thinks that the alt-right is going after the skeptic community. And I explained to him that there was doxing involved. And that regardless, I actually made a post on Gab about this, saying that regardless of what your views are, I do not condone doxing. I pulled out of Kilroy the very, very beginning because of how they treated you in Baked Alaska and just because of some other shady shit. It was just, it was too much shady shit in too short of a period of time for me to be able to justify continuing to go. And then it just, the dominoes kept falling and falling. And I just couldn't justify going. Like, it felt gross. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I don't want to go on about it because...
yeah, I know, you're blue in the face.
I think it's all over and it's sort of done. And I have no idea if what the future of the Kilroy conference will be. And I have heard rumblings in certain intriguing directions, so I don't want to sort of jump the gun and say anything just now that I would regret. But yes, it's been a real fucking weird story there.
There will probably be, in some capacity, we don't know yet, there will probably be something that involves, I mean, I can say this now, there will probably be something that involves me, you, maybe Faith, maybe other people who are into actual legitimate free speech that support different views, maybe views that hinge on identitarianism, maybe views that hinge on other topics that aren't identitarianism. That remains to be seen. Right now, I know that you don't have much time.
Oh, I've not. Oh, gosh.
You have a full-time job.
This is it, right? It was never, I never really committed to doing Kilroy. Well, I did eventually, but I wasn't sure because I'm going to be incredibly busy next year. So it was all quite, but then I said yes. And then like a day or two later, they said no. They didn't want me anymore because they'd overbooked.
Was it Dave? You were heartbroken.
I had got this idea for a really good speech. Right. And until I had that idea, I wasn't sure whether I was going to go because, you know, but then I got this idea and I thought I was really excited about it. And then they cancelled. So It was annoying because I knew it was going to be a mainly skeptic audience. So I was thinking, what the fuck can I say to a mainly skeptic audience? But then I had this idea.
I didn't tell you this, but I did go to their, I had had a back and forth with the event on Twitter with the event Twitter feed and had asked for both you and Alaska. Like I had kind of pleaded on both of your behalves and said, look, I don't agree with either of their views. This was back in the day and said, is there any chance in hell that you could add a third day? Because it seems like there's a lot more speakers than there are time slots.
And what did they say?
Nothing. Oh, so we'll follow up when I'm not on the live stream.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'll follow up when I'm not on live stream and when, yeah, there's some juicy juice. In fact, I decided to cancel Kilroy because of some lies that were told to me.
Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah. Well, it's a very strange story. And I think lots of people who, they've got complicated feelings about it. Let's put it that way. But anyway, let's leave it here because we're starting to stray off the main topic.
Yeah.
So, I think this has been very interesting. I hope that people have enjoyed this. I know some people in the live chat are frustrated that you're not...
That I'm not all right yet? You haven't...
Cool. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go tell Bunty that you finally flipped me. Because he asked me a few days ago if I was all right. And I go, yep, sure I am.
Well, Bunty, I suppose I could debate him. I think it has been...
We're going to talk. You and I will follow up. You and I will follow up. Yeah. Mm. There will be some discussions. Okay. So
The thing is, it's just, as far as I can see, we've got nothing. There's no common ground for us to, if he had come from India, then I could say to him, don't you want to be among your own people? Don't you want, you could be back there. But the fact is, he wasn't even born there. He was born in Canada. So he doesn't even have that memory of being among his own people. Yeah. So he's a totally deracinated citizen of the world who, of course, thinks, why can't all white people just be like this as well? And then I won't be an outsider anymore. So, you know, it's very difficult to find any common ground with someone like that. But as any white person, I can illustrate to them quite easily that, there is something that they're losing. You know, because most white people today still remember their childhood or their early adulthood and the way it was then. And, so there's hope for them.
Yeah. So you've only got a few minutes before you have to hop on the next one.
Yeah, I know. It's annoying, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, I am definitely, I don't want to ascribe myself a label because I'm still learning. And I do have a couple of mentors that I've reached out to. And I want people to know that I'm definitely not moving to the left. Please be patient with me. You're not going to help by bullying me and spamming my comment section and calling me a mud shark. That's sure shit not going to get you anywhere. So.
Yeah. All right.
I'm learning and I'm open-minded. So. Okay. And thank you.
Well, thank you, Annika and Jacob from Make Robots Not War. Okay. This is very interesting. And the next one is with Nationalist Wrath. That'll be in about 10 minutes. And, I'll see you then. So once again, thank you, Annika. Thank you, Jacob. This has been very interesting. I've enjoyed this. And everyone else, I'll see you soon. Okay.